Welcome to the Viscast. My name is Joshua Viss. In this episode, Chris and I give you an update on Israel-Palestine. We did this about a week and a half ago, so it's not an up-to-the-minute, the most recent news out of Israel-Palestine, which is mostly around the failure of a ceasefire and the imminent invasion of Rafah by Israel. So as that unfolds, we'll come to you with another update probably in about a week. Until then, I hope you find this helpful, and thanks for listening. So we're sitting here trying to figure out what to tell you about Israel-Palestine at the moment.
And it's not easy to figure that out.
No. And maybe that's just worth saying at the beginning is, like, we're following this very closely, obviously. For our jobs, this is what we need to do. But also we become personally invested with friends, Israeli friends, Palestinian friends, and coworkers as well. So it's not just for our job, it's also because we, you know, legitimately have come to care, which is a hard thing to do at the moment. To care about Israel-Palestine right now is a lot of emotional labor from afar and without a lot of agency.
Right.
And I think that's hard. That's a thing you have to get used to when you do. I've realized as the years have built up of doing this type of work, I've realized, man, the resilience you need to do this type of work is a type of, I almost said Portuguese, whoops, is a type of work that if you don't get good at, you can't stay in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's what I've figured out. If you can't get good at managing the emotional labor of being involved in something so difficult and so tragic, then you will. The only other option really is to disengage.
And
sometimes you do disengage for, like, take a break, take
a
day.
As we have, I would say disengage or become really, really angry and jaded and, to have that emotion kind of control and dictate how you respond and what you think. Those feel like the couple of paths that,
right.
And both I have felt in the last 6 months, 7 months here.
And I think the other possibility is to become sort of radicalized in one direction or the other. Because if you do that, there's a kind of more comfortability in that space. Our temptation would be to radicalize in the direction of pro-Palestinian, decolonize Israel-Palestine, you know, from the river to the sea, but not in a way that means the erasure of Jewish people. although I think, I don't see anyone who uses that phrase in a different way, but that phrase has also been problematic for these protesters because it signals the erasure of Jewish people from the land. But that's the other temptation, because if you go all the way, and I think I didn't intend to start it this way, but I think part of the difficulty people have with college campuses and college protesters is these are young people, and they are apt to run to extremes on positions that feels comfortable to them. And then you're going to get some individuals who say some things that are not okay, right? Or take it too far to a place that becomes intimidating to Jewish students, right? This is the concern that's happening, that's being raised about these protests on college campuses. But we've been saying, as we've talked back and forth about the college campus thing, is like the reporting is kind of all over the place, lacking the sort of specifics you might like. They'll say things like Jewish students don't feel safe,
right?
Which I believe, but also that doesn't mean necessarily that the protesters are going sort of beyond the pale and threatening and intimidating them. It might just be that seeing a bunch of their fellow students advocating in a strong way for the freedom and self-determination of Palestinians, like, that's just enough to make them feel uncomfortable, intimidated. I can imagine that, right? But that doesn't mean that the protesters are doing anything necessarily wrong that should lead to their arrest or should mean they have to close down their protest. So it's a struggle on every front, even in the just in the American context. It really is hard to say with any certainty, this is what's happening, this is why it's happening, and this is sort of where I stand on that particular issue, which is what we're kind of always trying to do, and we're trying to do it in as fair a way as possible. And fair, I think about this a lot too. What is fair? What is acting in good faith mean? And part of it is defining for yourself some values that you're going to stick to. Trying to hear both sides, right? Trying to be sympathetic to both sides. But there are times when the values don't allow for sympathy. So I'll switch to the thing we were going to start with now, which is a bit of an update, but kind of a from however many thousand feet you want. 30,000 feet, that's what we usually say, is 40,000 feet. Whatever the cruising altitude of a big jet is, that's where we're going to do this thing. And we were talking, and one of the things that we sort of agreed upon is that since October 7th, Israel, and specifically the Israeli military, with the support of the Israeli population, I would say, and certainly with the support of Israel's political and military leaders, has really been doing everything it can to make life difficult or even, in certain cases, impossible for Palestinians in Gaza. Yeah. I think without what we would say is the proper distinguishing between civilians and militants. Yeah. I think the evidence for that is quite overwhelming at this point. So it's things like, obviously, death, typically via bombing. But we also know from reports now that there were areas that were designated as like no-go zones. And anybody who went into those at any moment was a target, like shoot to kill by the IDF. We know now that the bombing campaign was rather indiscriminate with the use of AI. There are three different AI programs. One, the first one that we learned about was called The Gospel. And that told us about a couple of things. One was that power targets were a part of that program, meaning targets that were designed to sort of hurt the civilian population or demoralize the civilian population, not necessarily kill lots of civilians, but hit big targets like schools, mosques, important infrastructure,
food production,
electricity, the cell phone towers would go in and out. I mean, targets that had nothing to do with killing active militants. They were not targeted in these particular ones. That is, I think, has not even been disputed by Israel.
Not that we've been able to find.
That we've been able to find. Mass starvation. Again, like with the college campuses, on the issue of aid into Gaza, it's really hard to get good information about how many trucks are being let in, from where, is it sufficient, is it getting better now that the U.S. has been putting tons of pressure on the Israeli government, and they keep saying things like, we're going to flood Gaza with aid, and we keep sort of waiting to see that, and you see increases, and you hear reports about increases, but it's unclear.
It's very unclear. And I think what, as best we can tell, again, given the lack of clarity, it does seem that the amount of supplies and food entering Gaza is still below pre-October 7 numbers. I don't think we've seen reports at all of us even reaching that level, which everyone says would be the bare minimum.
Right, because at that point you had some functioning agricultural economy within Gaza supplying food to people, and the aid trucks were like to supplement.
You had hospitals
Hospitals functioning.
There's almost no hospital functioning in Gaza. All those things. You had shelter. People had places to live. They no longer have places to live. All those supplies are required.
That's right.
And we've not even hit those numbers yet.
Right. And the numbers they talk about are like 500 trucks a day was what was going in before October 7th. The most I've seen since then, and it was relatively recently. And again, the reporting is scattered, and we want to talk about why that is. But I saw something that said 400 had gone in like a week ago. Mm-hmm. And it said that was the most that had been in one single day. And then yesterday I saw another one that said 300 and some had been let in like 2 days ago. And that was actually the most ever. I don't know what's true.
Yep.
I do know this much is true. Israel has purposefully chosen not to allow sufficient aid to go in so that no one is starving Gaza. That is an undeniable fact. They have chosen over the course of, what are we, 6-7 months into this one now? Over half a year, they've chosen day by day to find ways to not let food sitting on the border of Gaza get in so that the people don't have enough food, don't have the medical supplies they need. And all sorts of other supplies that I can't even think of because I don't know what it's like to be in a situation like that where you just don't have access to basic things.
Yeah.
It is a policy of, along with these other ones that we've named and we will name, my mind keeps saying capital punishment, but that's not what I want. Collective punishment is the word I want.
Yeah.
This is happening with the full awareness of the entire world, including the United States. And I don't know what to say about, I don't know how to rationalize it to be okay. You hear things like, these are the things we hear about the aid and why it's not being let in. They have to go through and make sure there's nothing that could be used for weaponry. So they'll go through and they will choose to take out things that make no sense whatsoever. And if you look, you'll find, you know, we saw Chris Van Hollen talking on Meet the Press maybe a month ago,
Senator from Maryland,
Senator from Maryland, about things they were turning, they were like maternity kits. I mean, just very strange stuff that's not, I don't think Israel even actually thinks these are problematic things. They're doing it to punish the civilian population. And what we're getting from the U.S. government, right? So we have, let's finish all the things before I get sidetracked. We have the bombing, which has been, so we have the program called the Gospel, which said the Paro targets. We also have two other programs. One's called Where's Daddy, if you can believe that, meaning where's this Hamas agent? And the other one was called Lavender. And on those, we found that the protocols for collateral damage were greatly expanded. Junior operatives, they were in the Lavender program. This is mind-blowing, actually. They were choosing to target junior operatives when they were home with their families, as opposed to try and find other places to target those people with bombs. They were choosing to kill entire families. That included, purportedly, a junior Hamas agent. And then if it was a major senior Hamas, hundreds of collateral damage, hundreds of people were allowed.
Yeah.
Right? So again, you're seeing clear evidence of including the civilian population in the punishment. What else? Did we think anything else we wanted to add into that? I have some.
We talked about displacement, you know.
Oh, right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Displacement, pushing, you know, so you now have over half of the population is now all concentrated in Rafah, the southernmost city. And then you have another 700,000-800,000. I hear different numbers scattered in central and northern Gaza. where there's even less infrastructure, mm-hmm. less access to aid. Mm-hmm. And the thing that is the last thing I want to say on this, possibly anyways, is there are no foreign journalists allowed into Gaza since the beginning of the war. Period. This is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, Western liberal democracies who say they believe in international law and human rights, you'll have embedded reporters, you'll have reporters, you know, like in places like Rafah and Gaza City, and you would have reporters from all over the world in Gaza reporting on this, and they've allowed no reporters, right? So you have things like the Al-Shifa Hospital was raided, I think it was a few weeks ago now, and all we just heard sort of scattered reports about what happened there. They've recently found a mass grave. People have reported that they were basically targeting healthcare workers in the hospital. But again, we don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know. And that goes for all kinds of things happening in Gaza.
Yep.
There's not the type of oversight and transparency that we should expect
from a liberal
democracy that says it cares about human rights and international law. And that's just been the case from the start and the whole time.
Yep.
No journalists. And again, it fits if you're trying to do collective punishment on this population, but not get the kind of, I don't know, admonitions you would get from the Western world, it's really convenient not to have foreign journalists poking around in the place where you're doing those humanitarian crimes.
Yeah, you do not want people to see, of course, what you're doing. An anecdote that just came to mind is, you know, this is now maybe a month and a half ago, to try and get aid into Gaza, there were these flights flying, coming from Jordan, you know, these huge airplanes, American airplanes loaded with food, and then they would drop them in with parachutes, right? And they did allow a reporter, because these are Americans, allow a reporter on the plane. And when they got over Gaza, they required that they not take any photographs. Why? I don't know any other reason other than if those images were to be made public and were to be seen by the world, it would have damaging consequences to the Israeli occupation there in the campaign, because it is so unbelievably devastating. There is nothing left. But we haven't really had many of those pictures, of those accounts. All those stories are not coming to us. It's not only that we don't know the facts, which is frustrating, but the human toll here is that aspect is also not reported in the same way that it might have been were there reporters on the ground. So this is a big deal. And it's maybe just because it's been this way from the beginning, it's just the normal for this military campaign, but it's not the normal when we think of campaigns in general in the West. So
I was thinking about, I was listening to Pod Save the World, and they were talking about Matt Miller, who's a spokesperson for the State Department. And if you follow this closely, he's somebody you're going to hear from a lot, because he gets put up there in front of reporters, not in the White House briefing room, but in some sort of State Department room. And he was saying that they cut the funding to UNRWA. It's hard to know. I don't know. A couple months ago. I think it was...
Yeah, it was a month ago when they were getting the budget passed.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's part of that process.
And they did that for a year, so it can't be reconsidered until March 2025.
Yep.
And they said they did that because of this Israeli report, which was brought to UNRWA, but it was just reported to UNRWA, and no evidence was given, that I think at the time it was 12 or 13 of their employees had been involved on October 7th. They then, a couple of them were dead.
Yeah, had been killed.
Had been killed. And they fired the other ones.
Yep.
Without an, I mean, they didn't do an investigation, and Israel gave them no evidence. Israel came in with a pile of papers and said, this is all our evidence we have that you have employees who were involved in October 7th. And then with that alone, the U.S. and many other countries cut off funding to UNRWA, which is really the only stable mm-hmm. organization in the West Bank and Gaza taking care of the needs of Palestinians, mm-hmm. basic needs, education, in some cases food, right? Health services. Mm-hmm. And so we cut off funding to UNRWA based on a rumor.
Yep.
Right? Now you could say, oh, maybe Israel. Nope. Israel did not share that information as far as I know.
And still have not. There is an investigation now that the UN is doing on this, and they have required or requested, I guess would be the right word, that Israel provide its evidence. They have done that formally on two separate occasions, one just quite recently, a week or so ago, and to this date, Israel still has not provided anything to back up this claim.
And I mean, it could be true.
It could be.
They have 13,000 employees in Gaza, meaning 13,000 Palestinians in Gaza employed by UNRWA, mm-hmm. or they did. Who knows now? Huge funding problems, huge organization problems. I mean, it's a mess. Could 12 of them have been involved somehow in October? Sure.
Sure.
Could
yeah.
be.
Yep.
You know, organizations are filled with all kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know that they were. We still don't know. And yet, we've taken this step. We're the biggest funders mm-hmm. of UNRWA. I think it was maybe $450 million a year or something. $350, $450, something like that. You know, a significant contribution. Although, when we start talking about these other numbers, it's not going to look so significant. And what Ben Rhodes on Pod Save the World was saying, he's a former Obama foreign policy employee. He was saying, like, we cut off funding to UNRWA based on some rumors, and we have done no sanctions on Israel based on seeing things happening in real time, knowing that there are violations of international law happening. And in fact, we've done the opposite. Mm-hmm. We have continued to send, sometimes going around Congress. Mm-hmm. So the White House has ways at times, like an emergency mm-hmm. measures, that they can give certain types of weaponry to Israel and probably to other countries as well. Ukraine, we probably did some of that. I'm not sure, though, if it happened with Ukraine, but it definitely has been happening with Israel. And then just, I think yesterday, the Senate passed an aid bill to Israel, Ukraine, and then the TikTok ban was in there. We won't worry about that. Although I'll say one thing about TikTok, without things like TikTok and social media, we would know so much less. We already don't know enough about what's mm-hmm. happening there, but we have seen and learned so mm-hmm. much from these social media. Obviously, it's chaotic.
Yeah.
Because,
right.
You know, it's I feel much better when I'm citing The Guardian or Reuters. Is that how mm-hmm, we is mm-hmm. that how we do it? Reuters or the Associated Press or the New York Times or what have you. Even Al Jazeera I find really helpful as well than I do
sure.
the people I follow on TikTok. But this is what we've been left with.
This is where we're at, yeah.
Right? Like mm-hmm. if you want more information than what the mainstream media gives you, and the mainstream media is biased towards Israel, I want to say that. I think that's obviously true. I'll just say something I heard the other day, which was, look at the New York Times. I think this is considered the most mainstream liberal newspaper in the United States and one of the most well-known in the world. And the two people that write about Israel-Palestine with regularity are Thomas Friedman, who's I really like. I find him helpful, but he is a Zionist, a purported. He doesn't hide that.
Yep.
And then Brett Stevens, who's even further to his right. Mm-hmm. This would be I think Thomas Friedman is considered sort of the liberal writing about Israel-Palestine and Brett Stevens, mm-hmm. the conservative. And they're both ardent Zionists, meaning they believe the state of Israel should exist where it exists, right? And it should exist as a Jewish state.
There's the key, yep.
Right? Which is should be controversial. There are not a lot of ethno-religious democracies. This is a troubling complicated but possibly troubling phenomenon, right? It's now being called apartheid, what Israel is doing by many organizations. Now I'm off, and I'm off topic. What was I trying to talk about, do you think? TikTok. Oh, the aid bills. But I got
originally. You
want to
go way? Yeah, that's right. Three steps ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So 20, I think it's 21 billion to Israel, right? So we cut off 450 million, 350 million, let's say, to UNRWA based on some rumors. Gone. Probably in the time when UNRWA is most needed ever.
Absolutely.
In Gaza, I
without
would say,
question.
Ever. I mean, the only place time that could compete with it would be when it was founded. Right, in like 48, 49, 50, whenever that was. But jeez, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine that there's any more needed time for an organization. And UNRWA is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees. It's just for Palestinians. so we cut off that funding. And at the same time, all these things I mentioned that Israel is doing that there, I don't think there's any disputing starvation, mass bombing, which has led to mass killing of civilians, mass displacement. There's no arguing that one. Mm-hmm. And yet they're getting money. Now, there is this little bit of sanction talk that we ought to say something about.
That's interesting, yeah.
Only because it's indicative of what the White House has been doing, in our opinion.
Right, right.
So there is this talk about sanctioning one particular unit in the Israeli army.
That's operating.
Israeli military.
In the West Bank. Not in Gaza, but it's operating in the West Bank.
Perfect.
Yep.
Operating in the West Bank. I think that if there was good reporting done and maybe some declassification of materials by the State Department, we would see things that this unit has done that would shock us to our core, I expect. Certainly extrajudicial killings are a part of it. I have no doubt about that. There's the possibility, it's just been spoken of in whispers, that they might sanction this one very particular unit. This is after putting some sanctions on a few particular Israeli settlers.
Four
Israeli
radical
settlers.
Yep.
So I do want to say, like, this is new.
This is never, yep.
We've not been in the position, at least not in the, let's say not since maybe Bush Sr. I don't know that history well enough to say for sure whether there was any talk of it under James Baker, but I know he was Secretary of State, I believe, and he was pretty tough. But now we're in the late 80s, early 90s, 30 years ago, more. There's been no serious talk about this ever. So I want to admit that this is a new step. It's a step, I would say, in the right direction. But it looks very silly to me and to many. I've listened to other people give their opinions on this who are more well-versed in government politics, you know. This is a pittance. This is nothing.
Yeah. The response from Israel would make you believe, they're very angry because this has never happened before. It speaks to our relationship, our country's relationship, right? That the possibility, because it hasn't happened yet, the sanctions haven't, the possibility of sanctions to one unit who is doing things, again, that I think we believe pretty strongly would make our stomachs turn, is just creating so much anger, threats of, you know, what Israel will do to kind of counter these sanctions. That says something about our relationship, and it's not good, I would say, that there is no accountability really in our relationship. Not that the United States is some perfect nation who should be, you know, holding everyone else accountable. But we do say that we agree on certain things, be it international law and, again, human rights, which we keep coming back to. And we should be able to say to each other, hey, this was out of bounds. And we're going to have to do something about that. But that again, that's not been our history, at least our recent history.
Yeah, we've got Israel has decades of doing whatever it wants and receiving the amount of money and aid it wants mm-hmm. from the United States, basically without condemnation and even more so with protection mm-hmm. from the United States mm-hmm. up until this point. Mm-hmm. So it's new. It's possibly significant if it is sort of the opening towards major sanctions on Israel for things like settlement activity.
Right.
You know, I've said this, I'm not sure if I've ever said this in a podcast, but it's so easy to forget that really in Gaza, the organization that should be providing for the safety and the needs of the Gazan people right now should be the state of Israel. They should be doing that. They went in there. They forced people to move. They bombed the hell out of the place, right? And not only are they not the ones providing the aid, they won't let the aid in mm-hmm. that other countries have paid mm-hmm. for. Mm-hmm. This is very bizarre, right? And it's easy to miss because we think of this in terms of two sort of fighting factions, yep. Israel versus Palestinians. Israel has tremendous control over all Palestinians in the region, right? You can only have so much. They can't fully control Hamas. They've not been able to do that, mm-hmm. right? But in the West Bank and Gaza, the group that has power is the group that should be providing these services. In Iraq, when we were, what do you think we were in Iraq? Less than 10 years, eight?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, things we should probably know.
Probably
right,
know,
as Americans.
Yeah. We'll
all right.
fact check that.
Noted. Mm-hmm. We were providing, we were not just in there to as a wrecking ball to Iraq. We did wreck a lot of things.
Sure did. Yeah.
Right? But after we wrecked them, we were like, I mean, you remember, what was it? Colin Powell had this doctrine, you know, you break it, you buy it kind of a thing. Mm. And he said that about Iraq. And we really did, whether we did it well or not,
I can't say.
I haven't looked into it closely enough, but we put in a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of effort to try and make Iraq stable, to try and make it functional. To make sure that people were not being killed indiscriminately by, you know, some of the militants that were there.
That's right. Yep.
We helped get ISIS out of Fallujah. I mean,
started schools.
Helped start a government, helped them oversee some elections. None of this stuff mm-hmm. has been happening mm-hmm. for decades. Mm-hmm. And it's so, I just think it's so easy to miss that.
It is.
And not hold Israel responsible for any of those things. And I think they have to be held responsible for those things.
Yep. Which I think, you know, we would say is not only would be the morally right thing to do to have Israel oversee aid distribution in Gaza right now as a concrete example, but it is actually what is required by law. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember learning that for the first time and being surprised, perhaps because the following of that law does not happen in the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. It should not be international organizations having to come and supply aid. As you said, it should be Israel doing those things.
Yeah, I don't recall, but it might be interesting. I'll just throw this out there. Who else was operating in Iraq to help the Iraqis when we were there occupying it?
Yeah, probably coalition partners.
Were some coalition mm-hmm. partners. Maybe Doctors Without Borders mm-hmm. ended up there. I don't know. I can't remember.
But again, that would have been supported. The United States would have
exactly.
ensured the success or tried to ensure the success of
That's
those
right.
other organizations.
You know, Doctors Without Borders operated in Al-Shifa until mm-hmm. it was too dangerous.
That's right.
And in all these other hospitals in Gaza. I mean, their stories are harrowing. Mm. Harrowing. You know, it's crazy because not only is Israel not doing anything to help Gazan civilians, they are doing everything they can to undermine the groups that are doing it, mm-hmm. right? So they killed, what was it, 7 workers from the World Central Kitchen. Mm-hmm. They are now, I think, currently not operating in Gaza after that,
yeah,
understandably. Yeah. And then they brought forward these allegations on UNRWA with the desire that people would stop funding UNRWA, which is the main organization doing the thing that they are not doing for the civilians of Gaza.
Yep.
It's no matter what you think about Palestinians or what you think about Hamas or what you think about Israel, this is such a dereliction of duty and decency and morality on the part of Israel. And it's so easy to miss because I think we think things like, well, of course they're not going to take care of their enemies. Those people are trying to kill them.
Right, right.
Right? That's, absolutely, I think, how we often think about it. Yeah. It's like, most of them are not trying to kill them. Yep. They're just trying to survive.
Yeah.
At this point, it's all they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're in Gaza, you're just trying to survive mm-hmm. from one day to mm-hmm. the next. I don't know what the situation is like for sure in Rafah. So Rafah is the southernmost city. There's, you know, I think we think about 1.2 million, maybe, yeah. People sheltering there. That's over half of the population of Gaza. It's roughly, I think, 1.8 to 2 million. Again, I don't have the exact figures. I think that Rafah is not quite as dire because I think they're getting trucks from the Rafah crossing between Egypt.
Yeah.
I think because when I look for reporting that distinguishes, let's say, between the Gazans who are the Palestinians who are in Rafah and the Palestinians who are definitely in a much worse situation, those who have stayed for who knows how many reasons.
Right.
I mean, what would you do with Bethany's ailing parents mm-hmm. if they just imagine they had to move 100 miles to the south on foot? Right.
Yeah, we couldn't.
You know, because you have Bethany's mom is not mobile. Bethany's father has a foot problem. This is a very common situation, right? Aging population. It's not easy to move about. So some people stay put just because, well, my aging or my elderly, or my, you know, it can just be somebody with a handicap who can't, not old. So there's lots of reasons why people didn't move south. What I'm getting at is I don't know if Rafah is necessarily, like, are they spending every day, people who live in Rafah, scavenging for food?
Again, we don't know.
I don't know.
To the point.
I think I can say that in central and northern Gaza,
it's worse.
That is what's happening.
Yeah, it's worse.
We're talking about scavenging for food. There has been, in this case, credible reports of, over the last, say, month or two, of people eating animal feed,
mm-hmm.
people making soup out of random plants yep. and grasses that
find.
They can
mm-hmm.
get just yep. for some nutrients.
Yep.
So, I mean, that tells you something
mm-hmm.
about the level of desperation.
Yeah. And I think maybe a place to end is, you know, back to Rafah. Israel has not relinquished its claim that it is going to mount an offensive into this densely populated area, even though the United States has said quite clearly, do not do this unless you have a clear plan to evacuate this 1.2, 1.5, however many people it is, which of course no one has. It's an impossibility to somehow take that many people and just move them when every other area of Gaza has been bombed to nothing.
Yeah, there's nowhere in Gaza
nope.
to put them
nope.
that would be safe
yep.
and that has any type of infrastructure. I mean,
yep.
these people need toilets,
yep.
for example,
yep.
right? Just to think of something you don't mm-hmm. think about mm-hmm. immediately, but you got 1.2 million people all
using
huddled together
restroom, yeah.
in tents.
Yeah.
And where's the restrooms? And then what happens when there's not restrooms or not good sanitation?
We get disease.
Mm-hmm. Right? So these are the types of things that people are very, very worried about, and understandably so. And yet, there is credible reporting today.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I've seen like sort of new reporting on Rafah that says, nope, Israel's doing it. They're going to go do this. And I've seen in the past, meaning in the past month or so, at least two different times where Israel briefed, let's just say American officials. It's probably some military. I know it's some military, like the like Austin.
Mm-hmm.
So the Secretary of Defense and probably Secretary of
Blinken
State
for sure.
Blinken, yep. And probably various State Department mm-hmm. and defense officials about their plan. Because U.S. has said, you need to give us a credible plan if you're going to get us to say okay on this. And every time, and there's been at least twice, maybe three, I don't know for sure, because I've seen a reporting on two different times where they said, okay, they briefed us, and we said, nope, that's not a credible plan.
Yep.
We can't sign off on that.
Yep.
That has not changed as far as
right,
I know.
As far as we know.
Mm-hmm. Which is not surprising.
Right.
Again, it's a total disregard for the civilian population. It's like, we want to do more killing. We want to do it here. And we'll sort of give a wink and a nod to caring about civilians. Some of them are going to die. If they go ahead, everybody said that. If the Rafah invasion goes, civilians are going to die. There's just
no question.
Inevitable.
Yep.
And they're just apparently going to do it. And we're going to sanction one unit and a few settlers in the West Bank.
This is
the problem, right? This is the absurdity. It doesn't, what did we say earlier? It doesn't meet, the White House keeps not meeting the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand why.
Mm-hmm.
This is all unprecedented. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have to do this stuff to Israel. It's bad politically.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to be seen sanctioning Israel or I don't even know what the other issues are. You know, it's supposed to be like both parties, Democrats and Republicans, agree on our ironclad relationship with Israel. I mean, we're decades into this now. So that's why they don't want to do it. What's amazing is that Israel has behaved so poorly, so terribly, that even this White House that wants nothing to do with hurting its relationship with Israel, mm-hmm. being seen as anti-Israel or sanctioned, mm-hmm. I promise you, there is no one who wants less to do with this than this White House.
Mm-hmm.
And here they are, seriously thinking about doing that.
Right.
And yet, it quite obviously is not meeting the moment.
Yep.
If the things you care most about are international law and human rights, right? If you're saying like, when the going gets tough, we're going to follow these things because we believe in the importance
of these values. Yeah.
That's what they're up against.
Yep.
I think we can say it's good news that the values are strong enough
mm-hmm.
to make them, to put them in this uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
position.
Mm-hmm.
While at the same time, I think we can say they have not done enough and they are currently, that is the Biden administration, currently not doing nearly enough, even though they're considering unprecedented things.
That's right. Yep.
That's how weird this situation is. And just as a funny ending, let me just say that also, like World War III almost happened when Iran set 300 drones and missiles and somehow not a single casualty or not a single death. There was a couple of injuries.
Yep.
Right? Like, I don't even... We don't
have that happened. Yeah.
To talk about when I heard the news that World War III had started. What I thought was possibly World War III. That's how weird and complicated and fraught it all still is. Thanks so much for listening. Chris and I will be back soon with another update on Israel-Palestine. Be well.